Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, right now, I have with me a grammar nerd, Star Trek fan, and other things that chicks dig. Who is he? He is Stephen Lohmer. Stephen is the best-selling author of the hugely popular Typo Squad series, the novellas Bell's Christmas Carol and Hell's Nerds, and the short story collection Stargazer Lilies or Nothing at All and BB and Red. He has been a finalist in the New York City Midnight Short Story Challenge numerous times and has featured stories in the anthologies Uncommon Evil, Once Upon a Time in Gravity City, and My Peculiar Family 2. Stephen is the creator, owner, and regular contributor to the website Television Woodshed and the host of the YouTube author interview show, Tell Me About Your Damn Book. He's a hardcore fan of the Houston Texans, despite living in the hub of the universe his whole life, and he believes Mark Twain was correct about pretty much everything. He lives in Beverly, Massachusetts with his wife, Teresa, and his books are available on Amazon.com, and his website, check it out after the interview, is StephenLohmer.com, and I'm quite interested to get to know him a little bit better, so welcome to the network, Stephen.
Thank you, Pat. Wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it is my pleasure to have you. And after I learn more about you, I'm excited to find out more. So we're going to get going. Now, your book concepts, Steve, are quite quirky. One reviewer used the word wacky. Others have said master of the mixed genre, eclectic. And for me, those are quite complimentary. So what I'd like to know is, what was it that initially caused you to put pen to paper in such a way?
Well, gosh, that's a deep and complex question. I've actually been writing pretty much my entire life. I only recently got good, so that's what inspired me to start publishing my work. But when I started the Typo Squad series, I was really inspired by my years spent toiling as a proofreader and a copy editor and a general guardian of the English language. And I felt like those people are terribly underrepresented. They don't have a hero or heroes. If they find 1,000 things and fix them, that's great. But the one thing that they missed, the whole world comes crashing down on their heads. So it's a very thankless profession. And I said, let's give these people some heroes, somebody to look up to, somebody to bring their struggles to the forefront, and that's why I created Typo Squad.
All right, we're going to talk about that. You said guardian of the English language. I almost imagine you in some sort of a cape.
I occasionally wear a cape. It's got a big G on it where Superman would have the F. But yes, that makes sense. Sure.
Oh, you're funny. You're also quite prolific, because if I look at the dates, we've got your book, Stargazer Lilies or Nothing at All, December of 2016, which is a collection of short stories. Then Typo Squad, your first, was June 2017. BB and Red was August 2017. Hell's Nerds, October 2017. Bell's Christmas Carol, November 2017. Uncommon Evil, February 2018. Once Upon a Time in Gravity City, May 2018. And the Typo Squad Book 2, June 2018. So there's not a lot of time in between these books. So how does this happen?
Well, really what I did was I did the research before I jumped into this particular pool. I wanted to find out what people in the publishing world, specifically the indie publishing world, knew that I did not know. And the very first thing I discovered was that in order to keep your name out there and to keep your sales high and the interest rolling, you have to keep producing content. And that's actually true in the real world as well. You know, people who write blogs and people who update their website regularly with fresh content are the ones that get the most eyeballs. So when I jumped in, when I put together Stargazer Lilies or Nothing at All, which was the very first foray into indie publishing, those were the best of the short stories that I had written up until that point. So that represents probably a good 5 or 6 years worth of just writing short stories for contests and writing scripts and adapting them into short stories. And then I sort of took the best of the best and I put them into the short story collection to use that to plant my flag. And then I was also writing the first Typo Squad book concurrently. That was a process of probably 7 or 8 years from one draft to the next. And then I just kept rolling from there. As soon as I published something, I jumped onto the next thing and tried to keep that ball rolling so that when people looked me up, if they found something that they liked, they could immediately go and check out something else that I've written and see if they like that as well. So that's why I've been cranking away.
So you really had a plan. You know, it's almost like you look at somebody who appears to be an overnight success, but you don't see all the work that has gone on in the past. And so you've spent all these years really preparing for this.
Very true. Yes. Oftentimes the success is when you see that really relatively small iceberg floating above the ocean, but mm-hmm. you don't see the massive part that's underneath the ocean. Mm-hmm. And that underneath part is all that preparation and all that work and all those years of toil and not necessarily drudgery, but yeah, sometimes drudgery. Mm-hmm. And you only see the end result, but yeah, and it's the same with any creative endeavor. You never see the ballerina's battered, bruised toes, right. But they are under there, underneath those ballet slippers, believe me.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I appreciate that. It sounds very well thought out. So I want to begin with your most recent book, Typo Squad 2. Share a bit about that. Maybe we should start with the first one before we get to the second one. And before we do, I just loved one of the reviews I read about it. It said, a wacky comic style, mission-driven action story full of clever word puns that you'll just get a kick out of. It's cheesy, but it's a riot. So I love that. Just that review makes me want to read it. So start with the first Typo Squad and then take us to the most recent, which is your sequel.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. And I will say that review is much better than one that I saw on Goodreads that said, if you like grown-worthy puns and dick jokes, this is the book for you.
Oh!
It's actually not necessarily a bad review. That's true. Those things are in there. So if you do like those things, yes, by all means, step up and read my book.
Something for everyone,
so
folks.
The right people will get this, has been my mantra since I started this series. But we can roll all the way back to Stargazer Lilies or Nothing at All, because there's a short story at the end of that called Royally Screwed, and that serves as a prequel to the Typo Squad series. And we meet a young gentleman who is he's stationed in London, and he's actually a member of Her Majesty's Royal Typo Brigade, and he sort of has his adventures, and he ends up getting deported and sent to the United States, where he joins Typo Squad. And when we start Typo Squad in modern times, we meet up with him again. But the underscoring idea behind Typo Squad is that it's set in a universe where typos are lethal to 98% of the population. And the other 2% who are unaffected or reasonably unaffected by typos join Typo Squad, and they are charged with keeping the public safe from the forces of errorism. So Typo Squad basically introduces us to the members of Typo Squad and their nemesis. His name is Anton Nim, and he proves to be a worthy foe, and they spend the book trying to apprehend him and keep everybody safe from what he's trying to do, which is infect the world with typos. And so Typo Squad 2, Return of the Wordmonger, which is the newest book, it basically combines that short story, the Royally Screwed short story, and the first Typo Squad book, and it sort of resolves that short story to its satisfactory conclusion. So essentially Typo Squad goes across the pond, they join up with Her Majesty's Royal Typo Brigade, and they attempt to take down the Wordmonger, who, you know, he was the nemesis 30 years ago, and now he's back. So So yeah, so and there are a lot of groan-worthy puns. I freely admit to that. There are more dick jokes in the first book than there are in the second. So if you didn't care for them, you're safe. If you love them and you wish there were more, I don't know what to tell you. I evolved beyond the dick joke.
He grew up, people.
I did. I did a lot of growing between books, yeah.
It sounds like those were fun to write.
Yes, they were a blast to write. And most of the puns are the people's names. The main character is Richard Chenery, but they call him Dick, so he is Dick Chenery. his love interest is Thea Thoris. So there's just a lot of great pun. And so every time I came up with a new character, I needed to come up with a terrible punny name for them. And I just fell down that rabbit hole so gratefully as I came up with one after another. And just running them through their paces and coming up with all kinds of grammar related things that they could do and encounter and problems that they needed to solve was really a joy, and I had a lot of fun with it.
No, I could tell. That reminds me, when my kids were little, I used to do the same thing on their lunch bags. So every day I would write a name like Rita Book or Lisa Carr. And
those are good. Let me write those down. Hold on. Okay, I got those.
The kids in the class would say, "Oh, what'd your mom write today?" So this is right up my alley.
That's great. That's good stuff.
So now, is there a third book after Typo Squad 2?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I wrote Typo Squad 2, and I had a sort of specific ending for it in mind. And then I sent it to, I have to send these books to more than one editor because, my God, if there is a typo, an unintentional typo in Typo Squad, they will come at me with pitchforks and torches, believe me. So I sent it to both of the editors, and they said, no, stop it sooner and keep these last two chapters as the first two chapters of Typo Squad 3. Because you need to end it on a cliffhanger, and here's the perfect one, and you still have two chapters after that, so save those. So there is definitely going to be a Typo Squad 3, and the great thing is I've already got it started, and I didn't even intend to. I just ran over the edge on Typo Squad 2, and now there's the first two chapters to Part 3. So I'm very excited about that, and if people keep loving them and wanting them, then I'll just keep writing them until I go blind.
I was thinking about that as you were talking, that, wow, how dare you ever have a typo in one of your books. Either that or you could give a reward or an award to somebody who finds the single typo, you know?
That's true, yeah. And if anyone ever did discover an unintentional typo, I would certainly play it off that way, that I had snuck it in there and that they win a free copy, a free signed copy for finding that particular typo. And there's also a great back door on that where you can say, well, I uploaded the file to Amazon, but I guess that's an older file, so it's their fault.
There you go. Blame somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, blame someone else. It's always great.
Such an exciting series. I wonder where this came from in your mind. How did that percolate where you thought, hey, here's a great idea?
Well, it's interesting because I can trace the genesis of it back probably 20 years, I think. And I remember exactly where I was. I was working for an advertising agency, and I was just sitting there staring out the window, and I visualized one of those nameplates that you see on someone's desk, and it said Richard Chenery, and then I further visualized it that it said Dick Chenery, and then someone had put a post-it note on it with the word big. So now it said Big Dick Chenery. And I thought, okay, that's got to be something. I have to take that somewhere. So that was the absolute moment and the genesis of the entire series where, and I don't know where it came from.
Yeah.
I don't know what I was thinking about.
So funny.
It made me think of that. But it came from there, and it just stuck in my head, and it percolated. And then it just grew from there, and I knew that I had to write it. And And joyfully, I did.
Mm-hmm. I love that story, actually, because I think a lot of people can relate to having some of those ideas throughout their lifetime. And so many people just let them wither on the vine. But it's kind of cool that you let it sit there for 20 years and finally did something with it. Yeah.
Yes, I couldn't let that one wither on the vine. There was it was too good.
It was
too good to leave it alone.
I love that. So now, which of your other books was especially fun for you to write? It sounds like all of them, but was there another one that stood out to you?
Yeah, I mean, they were all varying levels of fun to write, but I would say probably the next down on the list as far as an enjoyable experience was Bell's Christmas Carol, which is a novella that I wrote, and it's probably about 50% Charles Dickens and 50% me. And I took his original story, the original Christmas Carol, and then I reimagined it if Scrooge's former lover, Belle, decided that she wanted to change Scrooge's nature for the benefit of the community. In other words, force him to change from a miserable old miser into a good, munificent man. How could she do that? And she decides to stage a production where these actors will come in and they will create these scenes, and actors will play the part of these ghosts from his past and from his future, and they will essentially impose this change nature on him. So it's sort of the same story, except there are no actual ghosts. It was all an elaborate production that Bell came up with to get Scrooge to change and to use his money to help the poor and the orphans and so many people that needed it at that time in London. So that was a lot of fun. And I had to, you know, all kinds of respect to Charles Dickens, but I had to pull his language back a little bit and sort of scrub it and modernize it, because a lot of the stuff he says just really is hard to understand. Mm-hmm. So I raised my level of writing and I brought his down a little bit so that they would mesh. And that book is an absolute favorite of people who I meet at conventions and book shows. And some people just see the cover and they point at it and say, okay, I'll take that, which I love. That's mm-hmm. great. You know, I could be very happy if more people did that.
I want to talk about your covers in a minute. As you were saying that, I'm thinking you need to tackle Shakespeare next, right?
Oh, now there I would really have to raise my level. I would really have to rein him in.
There you go.
I don't know if I'm ready for that yet. Maybe another Dickens before I jump in.
All right. I just
into Bill's playground.
Wanted to put that on your bucket list.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Tell me about B.B. and Red. That sounds like an interesting book as well.
Yeah, so B.B. and Red. So as I said, when I put together Stargazer Lilies or Nothing at All, I took the absolute best of the best that I had at that point, and I put them in there as a collection. And then when I started to look at the stories that didn't make the cut, it occurred to me that they may not be elite, but they were still really good stories. They weren't the absolute best, but they were still really solid, really good ones. So I decided to polish them up and make them shine, and I assembled, you know, the remainder of the short stories that I had, and I put them together in the collection B.B. and Red. And the title B.B. and Red comes from the title of the first story that's in the book. And it's all over the place, because I can't settle on a genre, so I'm always writing a little science fiction, a little fantasy, a little commercial, a little literary. I just get too bored writing one type of style or genre. So B.B. and Red was the sort of companion piece to Stargazer Lilies.
Okay, excellent. Alrighty, let's talk about your covers. That was on my list of things to talk about because they're exceptional. Where did those come from? Yeah, they're excellent.
Thank you. I actually designed them.
Did you?
I did. Yeah. I chose the fonts. I came up with the colors and the patterns and the designs and everything. I had to get a little bit of artwork from one of the websites where you search for an image and you buy it and sort of build around that. But I really put the most time into the Typo Squad covers because mm-hmm. I wanted to have a really instantly recognizable insignia that I could then slap on pins and mugs and yep. T-shirts and hoodies and God knows what else. Which I did. Those are really near and dear to my heart. And the other covers as well. I spent a lot of time. I gave a lot of consideration. And I asked around and I asked people, what do you think of this? And what are ways that I can improve it? And I got a lot of good feedback. And that's what I came up with. So, yeah, that's sort of a secondary passion. I write the content and then I sit down and I start reimagining imagining how I can do the covers and what they're going to look like and how they can draw people in. So, yes, thank you. I'm very proud of those covers.
Yes, you should be. Typo Squad, the first book, that insignia that you created, that's what attracted me initially when I saw your website. That grabbed my eye right away. I thought, whoa, that is pretty sharp.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
All right, YouTube author interview show. Tell me about your damn book. Wow, you're doing it all, my friend.
I am. We only have a limited time on this planet, and I'm trying to get a little bit of everything done.
I hear you.
Before I shuffle off this mortal coil. So I had long thought about doing some sort of YouTube show, and I was tossing around different ideas and thinking about different ways that I could use the medium because it's a very popular medium. You know, the kids today, they love the videos. So I decided that an author interview show would give people an opportunity to actually put a name with a face and would give people a chance to know these authors a little better than, you know, just reading their bio off of their Amazon page or what they read on the actual pages. So, I set up the set in my den and I put out the word that I wanted to interview local authors, meaning the New England area, and people started showing up for it, which was great. So I would sit down with them and talk about, where they've been and where they're going and what their latest project is. And the authors that I know really well, of course, I bust their balls pretty hard. But of course I do. How could I resist doing that when I have the opportunity, when I have them sitting in the...
They're in your den, exactly.
Right, exactly, yeah. I've recorded 13 episodes so far. I've released 4 of them. I release them every Monday on YouTube. And the response has been tremendous, except from the authors themselves, because they do nothing but complain that they look fat or they laugh too much or they say too much,
oh my God,
whatever. And I'm like, look, relax. You're human. I'm human.
Yeah.
Two people having a conversation.
Yes.
Just take it easy and relax. if things go off the rails, I can always edit things out so mm-hmm. that, it's nice and streamlined. And I do my best to put them over and make them look good because these are my friends and my peers, and I want them to succeed, and I want them to have something that they can use, as an advertising venue. So that's been a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed doing that. I'm probably going to do a couple of more episodes and I'll call that season one. And then I'll take the summer off, just to recharge my batteries. Mm-hmm. And then probably in the fall, I'll start recording season two. So, just having someone come over and sit down and have a chat and,
yep.
and have a laugh. It's really a lot of fun.
Who does your camera work? I watched it and it was great the way you pan from the author to you and back and forth.
That would be me again.
Okay.
that was another place where I had to, become a student and find out how to record things and the lighting. Oh my God, the lighting! It was months of learning where to put the lights and what the lights did and what they didn't do and what angle you needed and how bright it should be and warmth and temperature. Oh my God, the lights were just a nightmare. But then we just record on iPads. So, you know, because we had iPads sitting around anyway, so I said, let's use what we've got. And I got video editing software, and I learned how to use it and put some music in there and a few graphics. It all came together. So the process, you know, it was a lot of learning. It was a lot of experimenting. It was a lot of tweaking and whatnot. But the process is very straightforward and streamlined now, so I can record them and get them done. Probably in half the time that it used to take me. So it's nice. It's really a lot of fun. And when I get a really good author and we get a really good conversation going, you know, I don't cut it for time. If I have to split it into two parts, then so be it. But the conversation is the important part.
Right. Well, congratulations to you. You really are doing it all and taking the time to become a student of all these different arts. And so that's very inspiring.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. You're never too old to learn.
That's what I say. I agree. Tell us about your book writing process. When you're in the throes of writing a book, do you sit diligently within certain time frames, or is it grab it when you can? How does that work for you?
It's mostly whenever I have a free moment, I will sit down and I'll try and get some writing done. The muse is not always happy. If I try and summon her, sometimes she's just stubborn and folds her arms and sticks her nose in the air and says, no, not today. And then sometimes I just fall through that hole and I just bang out 2,000 or 5,000 words in it, and it's great. But I will say that I liken writing to running a road race. So I really enjoy starting, and then I hate the process of running it, and then I love finishing. So there's the start, there's the excitement of the start before your lungs are screaming and your legs are screaming and your heart's about to burst. Then there's that horrible slog, and then there's that finish, that euphoric finish when you finally reach the end. So I may be one of the few writers who doesn't actually enjoy the writing process, but I enjoy starting, I enjoy finishing, and since there has to be something in the middle, I do it.
You do it. That is a very refreshing answer. I've not heard it before, but I get it. Oh my gosh. So as you've been writing, what have you learned about yourself? Anything that came to you as, whoa, didn't know that before?
I guess that I'm a much better storyteller than I thought I was. I feel like that's the essence of writing is being a good storyteller. And when I first started, I kind of doubted that ability in myself. Could I start the tale and keep it interesting enough to keep the reader's attention and put enough twists and turns in there that they would want to stay with it through to the very end? And then also at the same time, could I write it so that I would enjoy it and that I would be proud of it? So trying to please myself and the anonymous reader. Mm-hmm. And I discovered that I was able to do that. I'm not always able to do that. I don't think any writer is always able to do that. You know, there's always going to be some clunkers in there, or a vanity project where I wrote it and I expected the world to fall in love with it and it just flopped. This happens. But that's also a learning experience. That's, you know, I learned I was able to accept criticism and move on from it and take something from it and learn something from it. So all of that makes me a better writer.
Mm-hmm. Such an interesting craft, isn't it, that you're putting yourself out there. People are enjoying what you put out there, and at the same time, you're growing as a person. It's really a beautiful thing.
It is, and it's also one of the very few instances where you do what you do almost entirely. I would say entirely by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You're not really part of a team.
Right.
You're not a member of a band. so you don't have that sort of shared experience. You don't really have that camaraderie. You don't have that esprit de corps. It's just you and the page and the words. And then, you know, so that I think that makes it, but like if I were in a band and we wrote a song together and we performed it and everybody booed and threw tomatoes at us, we would all kind of look at each other and say, okay, we wrote a really bad song. But, you know, when I'm writing, if I write a really bad story, if it happens, then it's all on me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't really have that sort of, I don't have the ability to commiserate with anyone because this was me and I live or die by what I have written. So, yeah, it is. It's good to have, you know, writer friends, but ultimately it's just you and the page and what you're able to come up with.
Well, it's good because when you are a success, then it was just you. Can't share that with anyone, right?
That's very true, and you get all the money.
That's
so
right.
That's good. I haven't gotten it yet, but when it happens, it'll be all me.
Oh, I love that. That's funny. Oh my, we've talked about quite a lot of things today. This has been very fun and exciting. You're really a pleasure to spend time with. Before we begin to wrap up, though, is there anything we missed that you wanted to bring up today?
No, I think we've pretty much touched on everything. I mean, you know, once you get me started, I could just go on and on and on about the craft and the things that I've written and where they came from and inspirations and everything. So it's probably best to just tap the brakes on that one and leave it as what we've talked about. But yeah, I think we touched on everything nicely.
Excellent. You know what you should do? You should interview yourself on Tell Me About Your Damn Book.
You know what? I was going to do that. When I released Type of Law 2, I was going to do that. And the only reason that I didn't was because I had already mapped out the schedule of the videos that I was going to release, and there was really no window to put my video in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I may.
Yes.
I think at some point I may actually do that. And I think that would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I feel that you need to do that.
All right, done.
And then I need to see it.
I will be sure to send you the link first.
I could just see you doing that. That's funny. All right. We need to send folks to find out more about you and find out where they can purchase these wonderful books of yours. So give us your contact info.
All right. Well, if you want to learn more about me and find out what I'm working on and what I've just released and what's coming up next, the best place is stephenlohmer.com. I also have all of the Tell Me About Your Damn Books Tell Me About Your Damn Book videos listed there, and I have a blog that I should update more, but don't. But you know, I every once in a while I'll come up with a gem. So that's all available on stephenlohmer.com, and then all of my books are available through Amazon.com.
Okay, Amazon.com, and your website stephenlohmer.com. Let me spell it. It's S-T-E-P-H-E-N. LOMER.com, StephenLohmer.com. Well, my friend, any final words before we say goodbye?
Just want to tell all of the aspiring writers out there to keep doing what you're doing, keep the faith, and we need you. We need more writers out there. We need more readers. So keep doing what you're doing, and remember that you're the best.
Well, you keep doing what you're doing. You're the best. You are fresh and fun and then fresh once again. So I so enjoyed our time together. The website is stephenlohmer.com. Stephen, thank you so much for today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.